Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, April 5th, 2017. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, bipartisan bill in the Washington legislature would outlaw the sale of internet browsing data. Washington House approves $3.5 billion tax package for the next biennium to raise revenues, and debate on the delisting of Yellowstone ecosystem grizzly bears heats up. We'll hear from Louisa Wilcox of the Grizzly Times. All that coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A bipartisan bill to outlaw the collection and sale of internet browsing data by internet service providers is getting support in both houses of the Washington legislature. Although the usual deadline has passed for hearing new bills in the legislature, sponsors say the Internet Privacy Act has enough support to suspend the rules and to fast-track the legislation, which is in reaction to a federal bill signed by President Trump Monday, which prevents the FCC from prohibiting ISPs from selling private customers' browsing data. Democratic Senator Kevin Ranker of Orcas Island sponsored the bill and put it before the legislature yesterday. There is also a House version of the bill, which says internet service providers must not sell data unless a customer opts in, and that ISPs must inform customers of what browsing data and proprietary information it plans to collect. The bill says ISPs must not use a customer's refusal to allow collection or sale of their data as a reason for denying service. The Senate version of the bill says any internet company that operates in Washington would need written consent from a customer before collecting personal information. That bill also says ISPs must not use a customer's refusal to allow collection or sale of their data as a reason for denying service. Senator Ranker said, "So much of our daily lives now depend on the internet, paying bills, making appointments, purchasing products, and discovering new information." Republican Senator Joe Fain of Auburn said, "We wouldn't tolerate the government selling our information because we visited a particular park, or a company selling our information because we looked through its show window at the mall. We deserve the same right to consent in our digital lives as well." The House Finance Committee approved a $3.5 billion tax package yesterday, which would raise taxes to match their version of the Washington budget passed by the democratically controlled House last week. The vote was 6-5. The bill includes a capital gains tax on investment earnings more than $25,000 in a year, a graduated real estate excise tax, and business and occupation tax increases. Democrat Larry Springer of Kirkland said whatever version of the final budget passes in the House will dictate what the final tax package proposal is. As the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service moves towards making a possible June decision on whether or not to take Yellowstone ecosystem grizzly bears off the endangered species list, debate over the health of grizzly bear populations is heating up. Last week, at a meeting of wildlife officials in Jackson, Wyoming, interagency grizzly bear study team head scientist Frank Van Manen said he believes the population of grizzlies in the region is increasing, even though the number in the Yellowstone demographic monitoring area has gone down from 750 to 690 bears in the last 2 years. Van Manen says that's because the grizzlies are spreading out, increasing their range to areas outside the demographic monitoring area during the same time period. Grizzly Times website editor Louisa Wilcox has a different perspective on the reasons for the change in grizzly range. Wilcox, who has come to Moscow to participate in a panel discussion on grizzlies at the University of Idaho Law School tomorrow evening, told the Wild Clearwater Country radio show here on KRFP this afternoon. The two major reasons are elk populations and climate change.
Our elk herds in the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem are really tanking. And meat for bears is a very important food. They're tanking for a lot of reasons. Some of it has to do with hunting and hunting seasons and how they're regulated. But a lot has to do with climate change. Summer vegetation is drying out more quickly in the core of the ecosystem in Yellowstone Park. So elk are not producing as many young as frequently as they used to. So ungulates, elk in particular, tanking in the ecosystem. More and more people on the fringe. It's a big problem. Yellowstone is hitting record numbers of people every summer. Just people pressure, the press of humanity on the Greater Yellowstone ecosystem is perhaps our other biggest threat that we face. And it's not unique, obviously, around Glacier and many other places in the West that are, you know, beautiful places to live. They're getting a lot of people pressure, too.
Wilcox says in the face of delisting, the role of state management of the bears will become paramount.
The biggest problem, aside from climate change, and we can talk a little more of that, is state management, because the states are all, in this case, the states of Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana, are going to initiate a grizzly bear hunt. And what you're dealing with here is an animal with the lowest reproductive rate of any mammal in North America, and they cannot take a lot of mortality, and they cannot take really any additional mortality than they're already experiencing. And we've seen a flat line of the growth rate. Grizzly bears are no longer growing because of the loss of food, key foods, whitebark pine and cutthroat trout in Yellowstone, and bears are shifting into more meat that's getting them into more trouble. And you can't add on to the already excessive levels of mortality even more mortality in the form of hunting. So we're very concerned about state-level wildlife management because they are all about hunting large carnivores, whether they be wolves or grizzly bears, and that is going to continue to be a big problem. And Gary, you just mentioned earlier about the connectivity of Glacier to Canada, and Yellowstone's been isolated from Glacier and the Selwyn Bitterroot for a very long time, for over 100 years, but all of the scientists are really united in a view, and they're in the comments on the recent delisting rule, that it is possible and necessary to reconnect Yellowstone, and the best connectivity between Yellowstone and Canada goes through central Idaho. It is the Selwyn Bitterroot, which is in many ways, and for most scientists, the linchpin in recovery, that we have to take a broader view than just, you know, getting more bears in Yellowstone. We have to be thinking about bigger connected populations, if only to be a buffer against the changes related to climate that we're seeing.
That was Grizzly Times website editor Louisa Wilcox speaking on KRFP's Wild Clearwater Country radio show this afternoon. Wilcox says she expects a lot of resistance to delisting Yellowstone ecosystem grizzlies, particularly in the courts, as environmental groups and wildlife advocates sue.
I mean, I have never seen such fierce and passionate comments as those submitted from scientists on this last delisting rule. I mean, I've followed this issue for a long time. I've always seen comments from scientists, but there are more and more reasons. You know, climate change, too much isolation, the numbers are too small, the threats are too large, the states don't have their act together, they're not committed to conservation. The scientists are really united in concern because of how many species of large carnivores have gone extinct. I mean, we have enough experience with extirpating, you know, bears and wolves and other species. But one thing I just wanted to mention, and it's been a sort of an important motivational thing for me, grizzly bears right now are getting out of hibernation. We haven't seen any females with new cubs yet in Yellowstone, but certainly males are up and walking around. And to native peoples around the world, bears have always symbolized transformation, renewal, the ability of an animal to seemingly die in the winter, go in the earth, and then come out with new life in the spring. And I think it's time to take that idea of transformation a step further. It's time for we humans to transform our own attitudes and behavior for animals that don't have a lot of choices. These animals, like grizzly bears and wolves, are relegated to the wildest places we have left. And it's time for us to transform what we do. And this is an animal that's meant transformation since long before Jesus Christ.
That was Louisa Wilcox, the website editor of Grizzly Times, speaking on KRFP this afternoon. Wilcox is in Moscow to participate in a panel discussion tomorrow evening at the University of Idaho Law School. The discussion is called Future of Grizzly Bear Recovery. It's on the potential delisting of the Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem grizzly bear population from the Endangered Species Act and the social, cultural, ecological, and legal implications. The free event will take place in the main courtroom of the University of Idaho Law School. Sandwiches will be served at 5:30 p.m. and the program begins at 6 p.m. It's sponsored by the University of Idaho Environmental Law Society, the University of Idaho Student Chapter of the Wildlife Society, the Palouse Environmental Sustainability Coalition, and the Friends of the Clearwater. Environmental and animal rights groups have filed a lawsuit in a federal court in Montana seeking to ban two devices used to kill potential livestock predators. The lawsuit, filed by the Center for Biological Diversity and others, claims the federal government is violating the Endangered Species Act by using the two devices, which employ poisons to kill predators attracted by bait, and are placed in locations that can harm federally protected species, such as grizzly bears and the Canadian lynx. One such device, the M44, injured a 14-year-old boy and killed his dog near Pocatello. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services deployed the device on federally owned land near the boy's house. M44s resemble lawn sprinklers and attract predators with bait smeared on the device. Center for Biological Diversity attorney and biologist Colette Adkins said cyanide bombs are indiscriminate killers. These dangerous pesticides need to be banned, but until then, they shouldn't be used where they can hurt people or kill family pets and endangered wildlife. A primary election this past weekend narrowed the field in the three Nez Perce Tribal Executive Committee seats up for election this year. Three out of the nine seats on the committee are up for election. In the May 6th election, incumbent Bill Picard will face Mary Oatman. Incumbent McCoy Oatman will face Gary Doerr. And Casey Mitchell will face Jacqueline Simpson. In one primary race, Bill Picard received 166 votes and Mary Oatman had 116. In another, committee vice chair McCoy Oatman had 171 votes and Gary Doerr had 159. In the seat now held by committee secretary Daniel Kane, Casey Mitchell had 265 votes and Jacqueline Simpson had 148 votes. Voter turnout was 25%. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Moscow School District Superintendent Greg Bailey says preliminary discussions about a school construction bond have occurred because district officials are concerned about the condition of old school buildings. Bailey told the Lewiston Tribune it will probably be a couple of years before the district tries to pass a bond. Bailey said school officials were watching closely as the Lewiston School District tried to pass a bond for a new high school in 2004, 2010, and 2011 before finally passing a nearly $60 million bond last November. In Idaho, bond levies need a two-thirds supermajority to pass. Across the state line, the rapidly growing Pullman School District will hold a ribbon cutting this month on a $65.4 million high school rebuilding project. Moscow voters approved a $10.8 million bond in 2013, which made numerous improvements throughout the district, but district officials are concerned about the condition of old buildings, particularly the high school, which was built in 1934. Bailey told the paper, "We are considering what our next steps are. The renovation helped us stretch it a little bit longer, but I think everyone understands that these facilities are getting older." He expects the school board to hire an independent contractor to do a comprehensive review of district facilities, including energy efficiency and how compatible the facilities are with modern education. The high school's comparatively small campus near downtown does not have a gym or athletic fields, meaning students must take buses to the middle school or other fields for athletics. The Moscow League of Women Voters has canceled a talk scheduled for tonight with Steve Shaw of the Nazarene University. Shaw was scheduled to discuss hate, harassment, and human rights in Idaho at 7 o'clock at the Great Room of the 1912 Center. The presentation has been canceled because of illness. The presentation has not been rescheduled at this time. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there's a 20% chance of showers tonight, otherwise cloudy with a low of 44. 50% chance of showers tomorrow, mostly cloudy, high 58. East winds 5 to 15, becoming southwest in the afternoon, gusting to 25. 40% chance of rain after midnight Thursday night, increasing clouds, low 43. And on Friday, 80% chance of rain before noon, then showers and possibly a thunderstorm in the afternoon, high 54. East winds 10 to 15, becoming south in the morning with gusts up to 20. On Friday night, 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, low 35. Southwest winds 10 to 15, decreasing in the evening with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. And Saturday, 70% chance of showers, otherwise cloudy, high 45. Currently, it's cloudy at the airport and in downtown Moscow. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, and the public affairs shows that you hear on KRFP, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843, or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. Remember, all editions of the KRFP Evening Report are archived on the KRFP website for streaming and download shortly after broadcast. I'm Lee Robartis, Scott Jackson, assistant with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
Programming on KRFP is made possible in part by support from KRFP members and Hyperspud Sports, specializing in equipment for outdoor adventures. Hyperspud Sports is located at 402 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, call 208-883-1150 or visit hyperspud.com.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.